Well, speaking of Zentrepreneurs, the biggest, I think, charge or the biggest adventure people can have in business is making a movie. And so my next guest is Scott Bloom, and he's just written and directed a very interesting movie called Walk-In, and that's a subject I've covered on this program, and it's a subject that may not be familiar to the mainstream, but it's really when one soul walks out of the body and another soul, another, let's say, disincarnated being walks into that body. So they may have the same body, but there's definitely a different spirit in it. So we'll be talking about the film and talking about Scott's inspiration. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a very interesting film. First, let's talk about when is it opening and where can people see it?
Well, it actually was in the theaters last year, so it's actually just been released on DVD by Hay House this week, and so you can actually watch it online or get the DVD from walkinthemovie.com.
Great, because I couldn't figure out if it was a comedy or sort of a tragedy. I mean, there's lots of humorous points, but there's also quite a lot of drama and sadness involved. I mean, what was your intent to kind of bridge that line between the two?
I think that definitely whenever you're going for a challenging tone, it's definitely a big challenge to walk that line. But I feel that there's definitely some intense subject matter that I was trying to explore. And I think that, especially in the spiritual and inspirational world, that people have a tendency to only kind of focus on, the upbeat, and we're all happy here, and the reason they get into that most people get into spirituality is to heal themselves. But I think that making yourself feel better is only step one. I think step two is really coming to terms with all of you. And that includes, some of, your darker emotions and really integrating all of that. So I think I was exploring that on one level, just trying to not be afraid of some of the darker emotions that are a part of us all.
Well, I don't think I've ever seen a film like this, because it really explores some of the deeper spiritual truths, like what is the soul, who are we, in the form of cinema. So, I mean, you must have done a lot of spiritual work just before this film came to you. Can you give me a little background on what you've been studying and who your teachers have been?
Well, I first had my spiritual awakening as a teenager. I actually found myself in the company of sort of an unconventional guru, if you will, that was very adept at getting me into very intense metaphysical experiences. Unfortunately, he wasn't very good at getting me out of them, and so he kind of let me wander in these metaphysical worlds for in ways that I probably shouldn't have done. And so it actually led me into my spiritual awakening, but at the same time, I had to shut it off because I was to the point where I was almost losing myself. And so I actually shut down my spiritual growth shortly after, in the grand scheme of things, for almost 15 or 20 years.
Oh, really? Could you want to tell us who that spiritual teacher was, or would you rather not?
Nobody would know who he was. He was just some guy that you would think, but he was definitely very, very developed in some ways. But definitely not. His training didn't really include how to be a good teacher. I think he was definitely very knowledgeable, but he didn't have very much wisdom on how to apply that knowledge.
When you said
he wasn't anybody that you would have known. He doesn't write books or anything like that. He doesn't speak. I felt that I had to completely divorce myself from that, almost like an alcoholic. Even meditating or doing yoga would, feel like I was falling off of the wagon. And it wasn't until my wife had her spiritual awakening many years later, where I was feeling that it was sort of safe to get back into that, and she took hold of it wholeheartedly, and we actually started integrating that with our daily lives and getting back into our spiritual practice. And I was in the music business at the time, and we found ourselves meditating, doing yoga, that sort of thing, mostly to deal with the craziness of living in Los Angeles and dealing with the commute and all of that stuff. And in the meantime, my wife started a aromatherapy company, which was quite successful. So I quit my music industry. Her name is Madison Taylor, and so she pioneered soy wax candles with the use of essential oils back in the early 90s. And so I started working with her, but within just a couple of weeks, it was obvious that her successful company was on the same trajectory as my music industry career. So we decided to have a heart-to-heart talk and decided what we really need to do is to integrate our interest in spirituality and conscious lifestyle with our professional life and really figure out a way of living this way 24 hours a day. And that's how our website, Daily Om, came to be.
You're the guy. Oh, I didn't realize you are the guys on the Daily Om.
Yes.
You are the Daily Om.
Oh. That's right.
Oh, tell me, the Daily Om is what exactly? I mean, because I've seen it.
The Daily Om is an inspirational website. We send out daily messages. We have about a little over 1 million subscribers, and they get our daily messages every day, and we try to get people so they can start their day with a consciousness and awareness, and then we also do online courses with best-selling authors.
Oh, do you have blogs? I should send you some of my blogs from New Realities. You know.
Yeah, we should definitely look at it. We have our content is mostly original, but our courses we work with authors like Deepak Chopra and Debbie Ford, all kinds of people that we work with on our online courses.
Oh, they got you got very popular. The Daily Om is quite a popular site. So you have 1 million hits a day. That's great. But I'm interested in these metaphysical realms that you said you got lost in. What happened to you in these? I mean, where did you go and what was your state of consciousness?
Well, essentially what I was doing is I was exploring the spirit world and really kind of leaving my body and not necessarily that interested in coming back. So I was basically early on when I was having my own personal spiritual awakening, I really didn't integrate my spiritual practice with my earthly presence. They were really two different things, and I didn't really integrate them at all. And so I think that was that. You know, I think that in retrospect, it's very nice to have those type of experiences. But I believe that the reason we're on Earth is to have earthly experiences. And so I think that the ultimate goal is to be able to integrate these experiences with our life on this planet. So that's more my goal nowadays than...
No, I totally agree. I mean, we are already consciousness, but we're here to be incarnated we're here to be embodied. And you know who talks about that a lot is this channel I just saw named Paul Selig. These guides that he channels are really about embodiment, embracing our physicality as divine beings. And that's been a great tool for me in the last couple of years, those books, I Am the Word. Have you heard of him?
No, I haven't, but I believe that's very important to work.
You might enjoy it. Look up I Am the Word, Paul Selig. But getting back to the movie, so this was a film something you wanted to do for a long time because everybody dreams of writing and directing a film, or was it something that you just felt like you had to do to express these ideas? How did the film come to you?
Well, I'd say that what I've been trying to do ever since we started Daily Om is to really let my intuition guide me through the most important life decisions. instead of letting my intellect try to decide what I want to do or what's practical or what's logical, but makes a lot of sense in a worldly sense, really try to tune into my intuition, because I believe that's the gateway to the wisdom that our soul gives us access to. And so we were doing that more and more with Daily Om, and my wife was responsible for all of the writing of Daily Om. I was more the business and technical side. But then one day I woke up, and a story completely downloaded to me in the matter of like a second and a half. And my wife was the writer in the family, so I did what most people do when spirit calls them, and I ran away as far as I could, in the opposite direction, and tried to ignore what was going on, until it was so painful. I just simply sat down and I wrote the story down just to get it out of me, because it was becoming physically painful. And so I didn't read anything I wrote. I just wrote the whole thing down. And then when I was done, I read it and I said, okay, well, I guess this is relatively, this is probably important since it did come through me. I didn't really believe that it was my story per se, although in retrospect, I can definitely see some parallels. And that was how my first novel came out, which was called Waiting for Autumn. Hay House published that. And then the second book that I wrote was called Summer's Path, which was the prequel to Waiting for Autumn, and then subsequently I put out the third book called Winter Moon Rises. But going back to Summer's Path, that was actually the basis of the screenplay for Walk-In, was Summer's Path. It was the first book in the trilogy. And what
so the story continues. Oh, because I was wondering, at the end of the movie, you're just kind of left, well, what happens?
Right, yes. Yeah, that's the beginning of a trilogy.
That's good. I'm going to read those books, because I just started to get used to these people, these characters, and then I felt like abandoned by them,
So
I'm glad that they live on in these other two books. And
yes, they do. They do.
So you took the first book in the series and you converted that into a screenplay. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. The book is Summer's Path. The reason I changed the name is because the book basically follows the walk out. Where he basically leaves the body and then embodies the body of a puppy, and right. The book follows what was it like inside the body of a puppy, because of budgetary concerns, as well as I'm not that good of a director, I decided to rewrite the story to really follow the walk in. And what is it like, when someone has these intense spiritual experiences, how does that affect the people around them, especially their loved ones that might not be going through the same exact thing that they are? So I kind of use that as a metaphor of, how do you balance a relationship when you have two different, completely different experiences that you're going through, especially when it comes to spirituality?
Well, actually, I thought you were a really good director. The performances of the actors are excellent. The lead, Danforth Cummings, and the woman, Miriam Laub, they're just very good at the parts they're playing. I mean, especially Miriam. I think she gave an incredible performance, don't you?
Oh, yeah. The thing was, is I was living in Ashland, Oregon at the time when I directed that film, and Ashland is home to one of the most prestigious Shakespeare festivals in the world. Many of these people have, big screen experience as well. In the case of Danforth and Miriam, they'd never starred in a film before, although they had been in film, but they're at the top of their game when it comes to Shakespearean actors. So I was working, with some of the most talented actors in the world. The reason you don't know them is because they're in Ashland, but, they're just as powerful as any Hollywood actors, and so I was really, really lucky to be able to have access to such talent.
Right, Milos Forman, the director, said 90% of directing is casting the right actor.
Right.
So it does make, because they gave really very fine performances. I mean, very convincing. I mean, I thought your direction was really good. The shots were good. It was a very well done movie. Were you excited about directing? Was it satisfying, or was it really stressful?
Oh yeah, it was the way that the movie came to be. Is I was actually approached by Madison, my wife, was approached by these producers to make a De Leon movie, and she wasn't quite ready for it. So she actually turned them on to me because my books are sort of cinematic in nature, and she said, well, I'm not ready for a De Leon movie yet, but you know, maybe Scott would be interested. And so I went down this path, and he hooked me up, the producers hooked me up with a very talented and well-known director, and he basically was going through everything with me, and we were just about ready to do the deal. I was just about to sign it, looking at the paperwork and everything, and last minute I just called him up and I said, you know what, I just can't do it. I've lived with these characters for years.
Oh, the deal was for him to sign, to direct the movie.
Yeah, for somebody else to direct it. Because, you know, most people don't just, you know, call up somebody that's never directed and say, hey, would you like to direct a movie? Right? They bring in the professionals. Yeah. And so, you know, that's what they did.
So you
didn't
sign the deal with this big director, huh?
Yeah, so I didn't, because I said, I just can't do it. I gave them all the reasons why. I said, you know, this is the way I would have done that scene. This is what he wanted to do. It's just not exactly what I have in mind. I just don't feel like I can, you know, let these characters go. And they thought about it for a while and said, finally they said, well, why don't you direct it? You have some good ideas.
And what did you say then?
I couldn't believe it. I said, of course, I'd love to direct it. And then I was like, what did I just say? But it was fun. I mean, I had worked in the music industry for a long time. I've been around production, music videos, and that sort of thing. So I understood the mechanics of production, but the thing that I didn't know how to do, which I definitely learned on the job, was how to deal with getting, you know, good performances out of actors. And, you know, as we discussed, that was the blessing of having access to such amazing talent. So they definitely walked me through it and made it a lot easier on me than it should have been.
Well, they really did make it. I mean, I was very happy. I mean, I was surprised it was your first film directing, and I thought the cinematography was good, the editing was good. You know, it was a well done job all around. Did it get good theatrical response when you showed it?
Yes, I mean, it did. In certain cities, it did. In certain cities, it didn't, when we didn't have the budget to promote it. I mean, that's the thing about independent film, is it takes a lot of money to really make a splash in theaters, which is why we did a limited run and couldn't do it in, you know, all of the cities, because it would have just fell flat on its face if we would have, you know, tried to promote it in, you know, 75 cities at once. So we just did a limited run, and there were certain cities that it did really well on, and other cities that we didn't have the budget to do, and it did moderate. But in general, I think the thing is it definitely touches people on a very deep level, and I think that it just really surprises people, I think, of the intensity and the emotion. Because I think one of the things that happens, especially in the spiritual cinema industry, is I think that the movies don't tend to be tend to be more like Lifetime type movies, or they tend to be Talking Heads type movies.
And, no, those are awful. I'm so tired of those Talking Head movies.
It's just not something that resonates with me. And so, you know, I think I was basically saying, well, I like indie film. You know, I like David Lynch. I like these type of directors. I want to do something that I want, you know, that I would like to watch. And so I didn't really look at it and say, okay, what is the industry like, and what is the, you know, the Talking Heads type movies, and are there any experts that I can bring into it? And, you know, there's not a, in fact, I even make fun of experts a little bit in the film, because I just feel that I just wanted to do something completely different and do something that is more entertaining first, and secondarily embody the film with all of these subjects, as opposed to didactically try to educate somebody about them.
Right. I should send you my film. I directed a short film, a short kind of spiritual comedy called Never Wear a Dead Man's Shoes. And it's a similar theme. Yeah, I'll talk to you after. Maybe I'll just send you. It's like a 15-minute film, but I showed
you
a few festivals and things like that. But the idea of walk-ins now, because I have met people claim to be walk-ins, whether they are walk-ins. I mean, it's such a strange concept, but I probably met a dozen or so people because I'm in that field. There was a guy named Robert Young who was an Australian guy who had this near-death experience, and the old personality walked out, and he walked in, and he's living in Santa Barbara. He gives classes. He's an interesting guy. So, I mean, he says he's a walk-in, and maybe he is, because he's definitely, he definitely has information that's not in a way of this world. So what was your experience with walk-ins, and have you met any, and are you one?
Well, answering the last question first, no, I'm not one, at least not that I'm conscious of. Have I met them, especially after the book and the movie comes out? Yes, I've met several since that happened. But I think that the thing to really talk about is what all of these words are, like walk-in and angels and, you know, all of the, on one end, the angels, and on the other end, walk-ins, and everything in between. All of these words are basically doing the same thing, which is trying to describe a spiritual-type experience that really can't be described by words. And so we're all trying to grasp at these concepts that we all know are true because we can feel it, but we just don't know really how to describe it. And so I think that, you know, a lot of these books that we read and a lot of these concepts are just really trying to put words to them so people can kind of come together on common ground and say, yeah, I felt that too. And I think one of the things that we all can, well, not all of us, but many of us can agree on is that there's sort of a separation between our body and our soul, right? And that's one thing that's relatively easy to come to terms with. And once you start to accept that maybe as a truth, then you can start to use your sort of soul feelers or intuition or whatever to start communicate with other souls that are maybe in your field. And I think that many of us have actually had similar experiences, maybe not a walk-in where, you know, your soul completely leaves your body and another soul inhabits it, but just the concept of having another soul in your field. I think that maybe when you're in an unusual city and you turn down an alley that you're not familiar with, and you kind of get the feeling like, there's something I'm feeling that's just not right. You know, this doesn't feel good. And you can actually use your intuition to determine that there's another soul that's in your field that isn't, you know, your own. I think many of us have had feelings like that before. And as we get more and more sensitive, then I think that you start to feel even more and start to understand the nuances of what's going on. Once you've done that, then I don't think it's that much of a leap to start talking about, okay, souls that are in this body, outside of the body, I'm not in my body right now, I'm, you know, not feeling grounded. All of these words that we say in order to describe these experiences, walk-ins and those types of experiences aren't that far-fetched from that.
Right. No, I think you make a really good point, and it's something I've been talking about with my company organization, New Realities, is that there's a sort of a sensing of these overlays of reality that we are starting to feel out with other forms of awareness. I mean, we've been so brainwashed into a linear mindset that we've blocked out all these other sensitivities, and what this culture of spirituality that your film is about and many of the interviews I do are about, creating the awareness of the field. And the field will give us a sense that we are not just of the body, but that we do exist on many, many realms at once, just as consciousness. And as we develop that awareness, you're right, we start to tune into these other levels. But we are developing a culture this kind of subculture of this, what some people call multidimensional awareness. So that's very much the importance of films like this, is to start to plant seeds of possibility into the general population, which once embraced by the mainstream, will change everything that we know and think and are, and how we interact with each other. Do you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, right? I mean, the reason that we're here is to make the world a better place than the way it was before we got here, right? And in general, we haven't been doing a really good job of that basic thing that we're supposed to be doing. So I think that this is a really
important
aspect.
Right, no, you're right. But, I mean, everybody hasn't been on the same trajectory of doing that. But, yes, you're right. We're here to make the world a better place. But just gaining this awareness will change things in unforeseeable ways. I mean,
right, absolutely. I guess the reason I was saying that is because that's step one, is to have this awareness. Because once you do have that awareness, then you'll be able to really plug into what is good for all of us, and how do we really make this world a better place. But first, the first thing we have to do is to be aware of it.
But you realize this awareness is so foreign to the normal way that most people function. I mean, of course you know that.
I think one of the things that has happened because of society is that we have this conditioning that's really putting these layers and layers of callousness, calluses over our, you know, our intuition and our spirituality and our soul. So because with all of these tools like, you know, logic and intellect, which are very useful tools for certain things, but they just shouldn't be guiding every single aspect of our life. Because those are the things that's really removing us and giving us more and more layers between, our life and ourselves.
Right. So, I mean, it's yes. And there's these subtle levels, like you were saying, of more of this consciousness that exists outside the cultural boxes that we've been taught to exist. But how do we break down the big barrier to that in our culture?
Well, actually, that's probably ultimately what I was trying to accomplish with the film, because I think that talking about it, and even this conversation, in some ways, if we would have made a movie about this conversation, it would come across as, you know, any other talking head type movie. But really what I was trying to do with the film is to really set up and use the medium in a way that no other medium can do, that I know of anyway, that allows people to feel and to go through these feelings. And so then you can actually change people in kind of a less didactic way, because I think in general talking about this stuff is really difficult. It's so abstract, especially if you're not coming from, you know, you and I understand what we're talking about, and so it's easy for us to abstract it because we already know what we're talking about. But for the people that don't understand the vocabulary, they might be able to feel something, but they don't know how to describe what they're feeling. And, you know, I think it takes a while, once you've felt it for a while, to acquire the vocabulary to describe what you're feeling. But the first thing you need to do is actually feel.
Right,
so that's
to be,
what I was
gain,
you know,
the,
ultimately trying to do,
yes,
with the film, I think.
It's to gain, so the first thing you're saying that we have to do is gain the awareness that there is something to feel, something other than what we've been taught exists.
Right. Right.
So with that, exactly, that awareness, we can start, when we have the awareness or the sensitivity of the feeling, we can start to name it and or start to communicate about it in some ways. I mean, in a way, this is what Alex Gray, the artist, is doing with his paintings. Do you know his work?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, exactly. That's a very good analogy.
because I used to stand next to people and when he had his Chapel of Sacred Mirrors in New York, and they would say, oh, yeah, that's what I was feeling. It looked like that or it felt like that. And he was imaging an awareness that people weren't able to say or express. But so in general, I feel the artist's role is to bring out the subtleties of those feelings with images or ideas so other people can be aware of what they've been feeling. The artist reflects the feeling so they can be, in a sense, name and exchange of information and culture can take place about new types of feelings. So I think film is very much a part of that.
Right, absolutely. I mean, it's communication. I mean, ultimately, the job of art is communication. And so however that communicates depends on, first of all, the medium, and second of all, the artist. But music and, you know, some musicians are just as powerful, especially if you're audible. You know, Jonathan Goldman, for example, who does some amazing work in sound healing. So there's all kinds of different people that are communicating. It was, and I think that the more of us that go out there and use the mediums without holding back, I think the more that it's going to happen. Instead of saying, okay, this is the way it's always been done, so that's why we have to go there, it's going to keep it in this little box that we've kind of found ourselves in. But we need to progress the arts just as much as we need to, you know, progress this awareness of spirituality and global consciousness.
Right, and I think we're in a huge transition, because what you're saying, the awareness of feeling, of the subtle realms, and bringing that to a global culture, or at least mainstream society, is a leap in our collective evolution that has not really been attempted before. Maybe there were small spiritual societies that have done this, but to bring a planet into a new level of awareness, it's huge. I mean, that's what I'm saying here.
Right. Right, absolutely. I mean, ultimately, yeah, if, you know, the best case scenario is if there isn't, you know, a spiritual or metaphysical industry, and there isn't a metaphysical subculture, because it's just so ingrained in the mass market and the mass culture that there's no reason to have these separate little subcultures going on. I mean, that's ultimately what would be best.
Exactly. Actually, a friend of mine just wrote an essay, a blog about that called The Death of Spirituality. And you should read it. Zachary Fader. It's on my website. Oh, maybe I'll send it to you. But it's exactly that. When these ideas pervade, you know, the mass culture as a given fact, a given awareness, then all these other little things are unnecessary, because we'll have lived in a new world. And that's exactly what he says, what you just said in your statement there. It's exactly what he says about the death of spirituality. And
yeah,
we're moving towards that, because in a way there's no place else to go, I think.
I think ultimately that was what 2012 was all about, right? It was basically the tipping point to that happening. I mean there was definitely a lot of anticipation coming up to it, but I think in retrospect, and even, you know, for the year or two before, I was feeling that's really what's happening, is we're at the tipping point now where there is no turning back. This is fait accompli. We will, in fact, integrate our spirituality and soul with this planet, which is going to be, you know, amazing. And I think that we're all doing that work right now, and I think it's definitely, you know, happening exponentially. Could never imagine a website like De Leon having 1 million subscribers, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. But that's the norm now, which is great.
It is great. And De Leon is an amazing website. You've done an incredible thing there. And the whole idea that something's emerging, and I did think that something, I mean, I was waiting for 2012 since 1986, when I heard Jose Agüez speak at the Open Center in New York, and he said there's amazing events coming, and you know, it'll change everything. So in a way, externally, it doesn't look like much has changed, but I think if you use that level of awareness you've been talking about that is present, there's something shifted in a way that just seems more open to other levels of sensitivity. Would you say that? Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's definitely one of the tangible things that have happened from 2012. Like I said before, I feel like I was feeling it absolutely as real as any rock I've ever seen about 2011. It was like, okay, this happened, and it was so great, you know, that it was actually there. I was very happy throughout the entire year of 2012 because it's like, okay, it's finally here. I can't believe it.
Well, what exactly did you feel in that shift? I mean, what are you aware of now that you weren't aware of before?
I think that I'm aware that this is no longer a subculture that is going to remain small. That this is truly infiltrating everybody on this planet, and whether they're part of the old paradigm and it's not, and they're not going to be able to make the transition, or there's the younger generation that's already landed. The point is there is a transition. It is happening and it's moving. And I think everybody can, you know, if you tune into it, it's very hard to deny that this is the train has left the station, and you know it's happening.
Well, I'm really happy to hear you say that, because that's how I live, you know, with these ideas. And then, you know, occasionally I run into people holding up to the old paradigm, and I say, really? It
yeah.
feels so dense and thick and uncomfortable, you know?
Right.
And so there are amazing teachers coming forward. Have you heard of this guy, Damian Nguyen? He does these grid work workshops where he just talks about moving the light grid into different positions, and the whole room starts to sort of almost spin. It's like drugs, but without any drugs. It's just like he's activating higher levels of light frequency, and you're sensing it. You're sensing it, and you're sensing it as a collective mind as these awarenesses shift. I'll let you know when he's going to be in L.A. He's doing, I think, really great work. And there's another woman named Caroline Corey. Have you heard of her? I Am the Universe, her film?
Mm-mm. No.
She just did a film also that's sort of not really a head film. It's more activation of consciousness with words and images. It's sort of like a visual meditation. But since she has this awareness... Yeah, I think you'll like it. I think it's called I Am the Universe, I Am Love. It's going to be showing in New York on October 24th. But I think she's showing it in L.A. too. Oh, you know Deborah Peach in L.A.? Do you know who she is?
No, we recently moved here from to Ojai, which is where we're at now, from Ashland.
Oh,
so I'm just getting back into everything here.
Oh, you're in Ojai. I love Ojai. That is a great place, a great little multi-dimensional town. You know, Krishnamurti had some very powerful Kundalini experiences in Ojai. Do you know about that?
Yeah, of course. That's one of the main reasons we moved here, is because Krishnamurti has started a couple of schools. One of them is in North America, and the only one in North America is in Ojai. So we moved here to put our son into his school.
Oh, I get it. So tell me then, you have two more books that are in the series. Are you going to do anything with them as far as films?
Yes, definitely enjoyed the filmmaking process, and looking to make the second book into a film right now. Waiting for Autumn is my most popular book. And so that's the second part of this story, and just starting to put the team together right now. So it's definitely a big project, and especially now that I've gone through it once, I know what I want to do differently. So I'm being a lot more deliberate about it this time.
So are you going to use the same actors for the lead role?
Probably. There's one character that's the same, the lead character, and assuming schedules and everything, I've been talking to him about it for two or three years now. So I'm definitely would love to work with him again because I think Danforth is an amazing talent, and he's also a really nice guy, and I just like to hang out with him.
Yeah, he seemed like a very interesting, weren't you really happy with, like, wow, he got it? I mean, it seemed like...
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, I had to cast one person that could play two completely different characters and play off of himself, in some cases, on the screen at the same time. And that is really hard to do, as you can imagine, since you've seen the film, they're completely different characters. And
he was well done. He did it well. Yeah.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised, and that was what the whole casting process was about, was saying, okay, so you could do this character, but can you do that character? And most of the time, the answer was they could do one or the other. He was the only one that could really nail both. And so I was just, in heaven that I found somebody that could do that.
So did you have to explain to the cast and the rest of the crew, well, that this is something that people really say does happen? I mean, did you have to kind of give them a spiritual lesson that this wasn't just like your idea? I mean, it's your idea, but the whole idea of walk-ins is not, it's out in the public. I think, was it Ruth Montgomery that first wrote the book, Strangers
right,
Among
Strangers
Us?
Strangers Among Us, yeah.
Right, so did you have to, like, sort of spiritually educate the cast about this?
Well, the way that I am, I talk to them the same way that I talk to you. If somebody asks me questions, that's fine, but I don't really like the idea of sitting somebody down and saying, okay, this is the way things are, and this is how this works, and this is how that works. I basically just act as if it is, and then I talk as if it is, and some people wanted to go deeper into the spiritual aspects of it. Other people are saying, okay, well, this is just a crazy director and he's just, doing what they do. And other people are like, yeah, whatever. But at the same time, I think they were all very respectful of, especially when it comes to, directing a movie, that's one thing that everybody is really respectful of is creating the magic that you're creating, whether it's considered fiction or whether it's considered fact. I think that everybody was really respectful of it, and there was definitely some intense energy, especially in some of the scenes where it was not something that was coming from anybody there. And I even had some discussions with the actors afterwards about the fact that this is definitely something that happened, and some of them were into it and some of them weren't, and I think that was that was fine. Because I think we're all respectful of the project.
Right. I mean, of course, it's not up to the director to, like, explain it. But, I mean, I'm just curious, was there some, like in the lead actor, I mean, of course, it was just part for him, but did he have some more awakenings, let's say, because he was playing that role and possibly considering the reality of these types of ideas? Was it something like that? I'm just curious.
I understand what you're saying. It's hard to tell. I mean, he was definitely very connected already, and I think one of the things for him was that his mother was very into these types of subjects more than he was, but he felt it, but he just didn't really have that conscious. I don't know, awareness isn't the right word, but because he was aware of it. but he just didn't necessarily verbalize these types of subjects before the movie, which I think he was more open to doing after the movie. But I think in his case, his mother was very much involved, so he was very aware of all of these things. And the thing is we were living in Ashland, and so in addition to having the the most prestigious Shakespeare festival in the world, or in the country, it also is very spiritual and New Age. And so I like to say about people in Ashland, people are saying, well, I'm not very spiritual at all. That's what the average person in Ashland says. I'm not very spiritual at all. I mean, I go to somebody to balance my chakras, but I'm not spiritual. Everybody does that. Yeah. So it's just kind of...
Yes.
It's just the kind of what everybody does in Ashland. It's like, you're in the co-op and people talk about, the field or whatever, or they go to a constellation or whatever. It's just everybody does all these things in Ashland. It's just the way it is. Although they don't think of themselves as spiritual, it just happens all the time.
Right. It's like Sedona or Santa Fe or Boulder. It's just part of like the general culture
it is. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And that's the reality I live in. That's the world I live in. One of my favorite scenes was when Don, the character in the movie, confronts the that kind of workshop leader
uh-huh.
and talks about his lack of forgiveness for his father. I mean, I thought that was... I've wanted to say things like that myself to different spiritual teachers and saying, well, you're missing a whole point here. I mean, was that based on a true experience somehow?
Well, I think that was the part where I'm an author on and Hay House publishes our books, and they have conferences, and I think that they're a fantastic company and everything. But just the whole industry of self-help and the industry of spirituality, I was just kind of making a tongue-in-cheek sort of statement about that.
Well done.
What?
I said it was well done.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, so that was kind of what I was trying to do. It wasn't anything specific. It was just kind of a general statement of, the business of spirituality. I was just kind of, where people come up with a concept and they're like, okay, I need to get a slogan. And I need this slogan to, people will pay me if I have a strong enough slogan and, that type of stuff. And, I think that slogans are good, and I think that definitely there's a lot of people with really intense talent that are helping millions and millions of people. But there are also some people in the spiritual industry that are, really in it for the money and for the industry part of it. And, it is what it is, and I'm not trying to be judgmental about it. I just think it's kind of funny, and so that's what I was trying to make a joke about.
It's an industry, for sure, and there are people who are not that aware, who are playing on the kind of frailties of some people. I'm not making a judgment. It just is, and if those people are being helped by someone, great. But, yes, I call it an industry. It is a total industry, and... And there's some superstars in it, and there's some other people. But the important thing is that it exists as an arm of culture, in a sense. And it is becoming more and more. And you're right. It doesn't look like it's going away. It looks like something is here to stay. And that is changing the fundamental concepts of who we think we are as human beings.
Right. And if it wasn't an industry, then it wouldn't be able to sustain itself either. I mean, because really, spirituality shouldn't be a part-time job. It really should be a full-time job for all of us. And,
right. And it is, actually. Whether people know it or not, it actually is. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Absolutely.
So, did you see the film The Master?
No, I haven't. I have that on my list, though.
Oh, you got to see that. I'd be curious. That is the most extreme form of this kind of industry. Of course, it was supposed to be a sort of takeoff on L. Ron Hubbard, but it's actually scary in the sense that there's a lot of these self-help teachers that have become almost cultish, and you have to really walk that line, I think, in a lot of these teachings of how much you're going to take and how much you're not going to take, and where does the ego run into the wisdom. And so it's an interesting film. It's incredibly well directed and acted. I mean, the acting is just phenomenal. I mean, those both of the leads, Philip Seymour Hoffman and who's the other guy? Jacqueline Phoenix, I think. Anyway, great, great film. So just a few more questions, and I know it's getting late. But so you're going to start the next production. Are you going to call it the name of the book?
It's a little bit early to tell, but I'm guessing probably. I'm guessing it will probably be called Waiting for Autumn.
Waiting for Autumn. And the third book in the series is what?
It's called Winter Moon Rises.
And do you have a fourth book coming?
Nope. I've decided there's only 3 seasons. So I'm going to rewrite nature with only 3
right.
seasons.
Well, if you're living in LA, there are really only like 2 seasons there. So,
right. Yes.
So how long is it going to take you from the time you start to cast it, to shoot it, to edit, to final product? How long is that process for you?
Well, I'd say that, you know, that part of the process is about a year. Usually the longest part of a movie is getting the funding, and that can take anywhere from, you know, a few months to 10, 20 years. And I'd say that, you know, averaging 3 to 5 years to get the funding, and then after that, then about a year to get it to the place where you have a movie, and then usually you have a year of doing film festivals and theatrical, and then a year after that to do DVD. So we're in the final year is where we're at right now.
Final year of funding, getting the funding.
Oh yeah, as far as where we're at with Waiting for Autumn, yeah, we're actually just not even starting the funding part right now. I'm actually putting together the production, the producing team partners and things like that right now to help get the money. So I'm sort of pre-money right now.
But would you like so last year I didn't even know it was in the theater. Is this next film, do you want to get a bigger shot at like a mainstream audience with this, or are you happy
yes,
with the kind
definitely.
Of thing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, part of you know that is a few more well-known actors that people, you know, that the theatrical chains can bank on. I mean, there's kind of I'm a little bit more familiar with the business of film more than I was before, and of course the art of it as well. So I'm definitely looking forward to upping the level on every level for the next film for sure. Which is why I'm spending more time with, you know, the getting the right producing partners and that sort of thing, because those type of people can help carry you through all of those decisions years down the road.
Well, actually, I might know some producing people if you're still looking. Are you still looking for some funding? I mean, yeah, you are. So I might be able to hook you up with some
people.
That'd be great.
Yeah. That's where we're at.
No, I'm excited about these kind of films. I think it's important. I just saw a film. Did you see Don John? This guy wrote, directed, and acted in his first movie. Have you heard about that film?
No. Tell me about
Don
that.
John, Donjon. I mean, it's not a really spiritually based film. It's about a guy who's addicted to pornography, but it's actually a funny movie, and it's really well done. And the guy who wrote it, directed it, starred in it, did an incredible job. And he had some big actors. He got Scarlett Johansson. He had Juliette Moore. Both are who really. I'm sure it's playing in Ojai or in L.A. It's worth seeing because it's really well done. It's a great commentary on relationships and ideas. And for a first-time director, I think it was excellent. And he was able to get these big names to be in it. So right out of the box. So it might be worth seeing. Yeah. Donjon. But thank you for putting this out there. Has it shown in New York at all, this film, Walking?
It did show in New York at a festival, but it hasn't been in commercially available outside of festivals. But of course now it is, because you can watch it in your home if you want, on demand, or just get the DVD.
On demand on Netflix or on what? On Hay House?
Right now it's through the website, walkinthemovie.com and hayhouse.com. And then after that, we'll put it on Netflix probably next year sometime. But right now it's just on demand.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you're busy with that. You're busy with De Leon too, would
yes.
you say? What's happening on De Leon with you guys?
Well, De Leon continues to grow, which is great. We have some amazing courses that we release, you know, 5 or 6 new courses a month. So pretty much just moving forward. And then we're actually looking at moving into some pretty substantially new ideas in the mobile world and getting into, you know, iPad and iPhone and all that stuff. So that's kind of what 2014 is about for De Leon, is moving into the mobile world.
Well, you guys are doing some amazing things, and you're, you know, major contributors to this emerging culture. And, you know, I'm putting on a spiritual film festival. Maybe next time I'll put this film in the film festival, in my other films, because we need to keep contributing in cultural ways to this growing awareness, so people can be fed with these ideas that start to shift the nature of who we are, understanding who we are.
I agree.
So thank you for making this film, and it's walk-in. And I look forward, well, maybe I'll even pick up the book. Where can I buy your books? Where can people buy your books? Just
ScottBloom.net has kind of everything on it. And actually, if you go to walkinthemovie.com, Hay House was so kind as putting all of my books on sale and everything on every format you could possibly want. So now is a good time to buy them, because I think you could even buy the, if you do Kindle, you can buy that for $1.95 right now. So it's a good time to kind of catch up on all my stuff.
Can I just ask you, do you see Suzanne again? Or does she come back anywhere? Because I liked her.
You liked Suzanne.
I thought she was a great character. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I mean, she was well acted. I thought that was great. But does she make any appearances in the...
No. She makes different appearances in the book, but unfortunately, her character is only in Summer's Path and Walk-In. It's not in the other two books.
Okay, just checking. All right, I'll look at those books anyway. And thank you. So, are you going to be in New York at all?
Not anytime soon, but I'll definitely look you up.
Yeah, look me up, and I'll send you some things, and I'll let you know when this is posted, this interview, and you could, you know, put that out there as well. So, thank you. I'm talking to Scott Bloom. Walkinthemovie.com, a really great movie that speaks to an emerging awareness of who we are as fully aware human beings, as consciousness starts to sort of, I would say, unfold in new ways within our culture. A film like this supports the awareness of a greater human being. So that's one of the reasons I like it. But it's also an interesting film just to watch and be pulled into the characters themselves. So thanks, Scott.
Thank you very much.
And I'll be in touch. Maybe I'll give you a call at some point during the week. And thanks for being on the show. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you have any comments, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. You can also check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening.